Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, February 22nd, 2016. In wake of last week's deadly violence in Malakal, the Secretary General of the United Nations is headed to South Sudan this week. And one government official says the UN diplomat is welcome.
It is very clear now he is expressing his disappointment, but it seems that it is not clear to him who is responsible for the delay in the implementation of the agreement.
And UNICEF says hundreds of families have fled the POC site in Malakal.
And as you know, in any situation like this where there's panic and chaos, children get separated from their parents. So we've had identified several children that were separated from their parents.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's government says it welcomes the UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon's visit to Juba later this week. The Secretary General is due in the South Sudanese capital on Thursday. His visit comes on the heels of a report by the Assistant UN Secretary General Evans Menovich, which said South Sudan is on the verge of fragmenting and said the conflict threatens the stability of the entire region. South Sudan's first Vice President Riek Machar said he won't return to Juba until thousands of his troops are in place. South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makuei tells VOA's James Batty his government will inform Ban Ki-moon about its effort to implement the peace agreement.
The government of the Republic of South Sudan highly welcomes the visit of the Secretary General because this is where he will get real facts on the ground. It is very clear now he is expressing his disappointment, but it seems that it is not clear to him who is responsible for the delay in the implementation of the agreement. It's good that he is coming to the ground to come and know exactly who is responsible for the delay. And instead of just get disappointed because the parties are not implementing, he should get disappointed because X or Y is not implementing or is obstructing the implementation. So we highly welcome him, and I hope that his disappointment will be clear.
Who is delaying the implementation? It's your government, because I think Dr. Riek Machar has said he's willing to come to Juba, but he wants his security people to come to Juba.
Well, we have already told them that we don't have the means of transporting his people to Juba. Not that only, but the IGAD, the Troika, and the EU have promised they have undertaken to transport his people here. But it is not enough for him to see that his forces should be transported to Juba because he has another condition, that he must make sure that the necessary conducive atmosphere is in Juba. And he is one who will determine that conducive atmosphere. So definitely he's the one to tell us when will that atmosphere be conducive for him to come. But for us in South Sudan, I think the atmosphere is already conducive and there is nothing that can prevent him from coming.
So, Minister, I know I did speak with you about Malakal. Did your government send soldiers to Malakal?
We have no competence to interfere with whatever happened inside UNMISS camp. And you could not believe me because you don't believe that in South Sudan, the UNMISS camps are enclaves that are under UNMISS only and UNMISS only. The government of South Sudan has no right to intervene or enter this camp.
Mr. Minister, so is your government going to assure the Secretary General that there will be movement, particularly the formation of the transitional government?
We will inform the Secretary General on the efforts being exerted by the government of the Republic of South Sudan in the implementation of the agreement up to this moment. That is one. Now, two, we will inform him about the role of the UNMISS forces and what they are doing.
Mr. Minister, you are kind. It's so nice to talk with you. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
That South Sudan's Information Minister, Michael Makuei, speaking with VOA's James Batty earlier today from the capital, Juba. Meanwhile, the UN Children's Agency says hundreds of families have fled the United Nations Protection of Civilian Sites in Malakal following last week's deadly attacks at a UN camp. UNICEF says many children were separated from their families in the chaos. Fighting broke out in the Malakal UN Protection of Civilian Sites Wednesday night when gunmen identified by local politicians as SPLA soldiers entered the United Nations mission in South Sudan camp and fired on civilians, looted property and burned tents. At least 18 civilians were killed, including two humanitarian workers. Vilma Ataya is UNICEF nutrition officer for UNICEF in South Sudan. She says her organization and other humanitarian agencies are still not sure how many people were forced to abandon their temporary shelters.
So from the initial estimation, this was on Friday, the second day after the burning of the POCs happened. There was about 5,000. They estimated 5,000 women and children that flew to the POC, to the UNMISS compound, and another equal number of 5,000 that went to Lir town. To Malakal town, to the town itself. So there were two different locations, depending on the ethnicity or where they felt safer.
She says the fighting has caused more suffering.
And as you know, in any situation like this where there's panic and chaos, children get separated from their parents. So we've had identified several children that were separated from their parents.
Vilma says her organization is responding to the needs of the affected children. She says UNICEF and other humanitarian agencies are providing temporary overnight care to unaccompanied children. UNICEF is also providing therapeutic food for the treatment of malnourished children. She says the attacks have made already volatile situation more difficult, with many people sleeping out in the open.
And another very, very pressing need is to ensure that there are proper latrines where people can go to use the bathrooms, because right now there's open defecation. It's very obvious out in the open, and this might cause a major disease outbreak. So this is one of our key priorities that we're trying to work on.
The UN says the ongoing conflict has devastated lives of 1.8 million South Sudanese and displaced more than 2.8 million people. At least 65,000 South Sudanese have fled to the neighboring countries, including Uganda, Kenya, and Sudan. The UN Security Council released a statement this past week condemning the attacks, saying, quote, "Members of the Security Council were particularly alarmed by credible reports of armed men in South Sudan's People's Liberation Army uniforms entering United Nations mission in South Sudan camp and firing on civilians and looting and burning of tents. Members of the Security Council stressed the attacks against civilians and United Nations premises may constitute war crimes, and those involved could be potentially subject to international sanctions. There are at least 47,000 people seeking shelter in the UN protection site in Malakal." Mungume Debs Rakarinj prepared that report in Juba. Authorities in the newly created Wau state say calm has returned to Wau town after 3 days of deadly violence between two different communities. But traders and citizens are not convinced. They say they are too afraid to go back and want assurances from the government that soldiers accused of killing and looting civilian property will be arrested and no more violence will occur. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Wau.
Authorities say the death toll in Wau's intercommunal violence has risen to 20 so far. They say the deaths include a woman and her three children who were burned alive in their house. Speaking in Arabic, Wau Governor Elias Wayanyipoch said it is alarming that innocent civilians died for no good reason.
I have seen the home where the three children and the mother were killed in high falata. This is very unfortunate, and it's not part of our culture. Even if we have a fight between tribes, it does not have to reach a point where a child or a woman is killed. This is really very unfortunate.
Authorities insist life is returning to normal, with shops open this morning, and people are beginning to go about their business. But traders say they need assurances from state officials that soldiers who carried out deadly attacks will be disciplined and civilians will not be beaten up. He's speaking in Arabic, a trader who was willing to have his voice recorded but did not want to be identified for fear of repercussions, says there is no way the local army should be excused for the killings and looting of WoW civilians.
Those who loot, kill people, and break into shops are the SPLA soldiers. A person who wears an army uniform, which bears the flag of South Sudan and carries a gun, what do you say he is? He's an SPLA soldier.
Charles Wall, chairperson of the Chamber of Traders in WoW, says more than 400 shops were looted during last week's unrest. He's speaking in Arabic. He says many traders feel unsafe and wants only soldiers who can prove that they are disciplined to be deployed in the areas to provide security in the market and residential areas.
The problem facing us is that around 2 p.m., the whole market will be full of security and you cannot differentiate. They give false accusations. They bring opium and bullets, accusing traders of dealing in such items just because they want to get money.
Governor Nyipoch Waya says the whole army cannot be held responsible for the actions of a few soldiers, whom he says will be identified and punished.
They are accusing the army, yet it is not all of them. But we are also advising our citizens not to generalize. There are some individuals within the army doing that, and we shall advise them how to stay well with civilians.
Religious leaders blame the government for concealing the truth about the extent of the WoW crisis. They also accuse local politicians of spreading rumors which incited the locals. WoW officials say a committee comprised of national ministers will soon visit WoW to investigate the unrest which has claimed dozens of lives of innocent civilians. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in WoW.
From WoW, we move to Juba, where the governor of the newly created Jubek State, Agustino Jadala, sworn in 7 county commissioners today, which he appointed last week. Governor Jadala asked the new commissioners to focus on establishing administrative units such as Payam, resolve land disputes, and improve food production. Jadala admits the state government has no money, but urged the new commissioners to preserve and to persevere until money is found to build offices and buy new vehicles. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
So help me God.
The commissioner's swearing-in took place at the former Central Equatorial State Secretariat building. Addressing the commissioner's minutes after they swore in, Governor Jadala urged them to focus on establishing PIAMs and other administrative units in order to provide services to citizens.
As you go to your various counties, you shall face with tough questions, the questions of service delivery, leave alone the current economic crisis or difficulties that we are in. And believe me, and I also advise you, you shall not bury your heads in the hot sun or cry. No, you must face the challenges that are ahead of you to make a difference to our people. This one, if it is means, even with the limited resources that you have.
Jadala instructed the commissioners to find ways to generate new sources of revenue from their counties to help finance their governments. Jadala, who is a former deputy interior minister and a senior army officer, also called on the commissioners to come up with the strategies to boost the agriculture in their counties.
I am giving you a period of 90 days so as to see your work. If your work is little, I will give you more, 90 days or 80 days. You feel you are out. This is serious. 6 months, you go back home.
Jadala says he wants to increase food production across the state but did not provide details on how he intends to achieve that goal. He also urged the commissioners to settle land disputes in their areas, calling it one of the major sources of conflict in Jubek State. He instructed the county authorities to stop chiefs from allocating plots to people. Speaking in Arabic, Joseph Paciente Pitia, the new Nyarkeni County Commissioner, says the road ahead will not be easy.
We all know in every state there are challenges, and we know each and every state has resources. We will stand together as one and deliver services. Mr. Governor, we have come to work, but not to just stay in office. We will deliver services.
The seven newly appointed commissioners are Brigadier General Joseph Pacienti Pitia of Nyarkeny County, Major Elario Paul Fataki of Mangala, Major General Martin Wani Jangara of Rajaf, Colonel Samuel Lemiyoseke of Onduruba, Major Gorit Kose of Lobonok, Captain Simon Muze Lujang of Rokon, and Colonel Hitler Roberto Abili of Oboni. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Sudanese demonstrate in front of the White House over the violence in Darfur. That story when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how far would you go to get what you want from a colleague or friend?
If the thing is very valuable, I'm going to persist until I get it.
I would go up to a point and give up because I do not really want to be overbearing on them. When they want to help, they would. If not, I'll let them be.
I'll go as far as being good to the colleague or doing whatever that will make the colleague happy to do what I want him or her to do for me.
Give a sort of joke, laughing and so on. Then I go to the point, what I want. Then I tell the person, I say, oh, you know what? Things are like this, so I don't know. Will it be possible you to help me like this? Then the person, if he's ready, say, oh, yes, maybe you give me 1, 2, 3 days, I will do it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. A group of activists gathered in front of the White House on Friday to protest what they call a rise in violence in the Jebel Mara area of Darfur. The protesters want to pressure the Obama administration into doing more for the thousands of civilians caught in the crossfire of ongoing fighting between government and rebel forces in Jebel Mara. Ayen Bior has more from Washington.
Civilians in the Jebel Mara region of Darfur have been fleeing violence since January 15th, when fresh clashes broke out between government and rebel forces. The Darfurian diaspora in the United States say they are extremely disappointed in the U.S. government's reaction to the violence, which they say has been slow or non-existent. Protesters chanted, "No more war in Darfur," and held up signs reading, "Al Bashir to ICC," and, "Obama, Obama, why are you silent?" Hassan Colbert hails from Darfur and was one of the protesters chanting outside the White House.
I am traumatized. I'm shocked. Because why? The reason, because our people are suffering from many problems. Nobody care about Darfur. Nobody take action about Darfur. What we need from the United Nations, what we need from America, to send troops to the Sudan, to send troops to stop the rape, to send troops to stop the genocide, to send troops to catch Omar al-Bashir to the ICC.
About 50 people showed up for the protest, which was sponsored by the Washington-based NGO Darfur Women Action Group. Just last week, the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs reported a big increase in the number of displaced persons in the Jebel Mara region from 38,000 about 2 weeks ago to 73,000 last week. Since then, multiple reports of aerial bombardments by government warplanes and fighting between rebel and government forces have surfaced. The number of casualties is unknown, but protester Adib Youssef, who used to live in the Jebel Mara area, says some of his family members were killed in the recent violence.
I lost a lot of cousins on the war, on the fighting. They are civilian, they are innocent civilian living in their villages, and the government came, attacked them, and killed them. I lost three cousins in this current war.
Nimat Ahmadi, the president of the Darfur Women Action Group, says she is frustrated because this is not the first time she has protested over atrocities and human rights violations in Darfur in front of the White House.
Many people who have been already displaced for about 5 times before, they are currently under attack and they have been forced to flee. Many people have been killed. Women and girls have been abducted and until today no one knows their fate. The government of Sudan is bombing people. They are using aerial bombing and also ground attack.
With the help of bullhorns, protesters like Hassan Kober sent a loud and clear message to the Obama administration, saying the president can and should do more to leverage his power and bring justice to the innocent civilians of Darfur.
For that reason, we came here to send message to the world to stop the genocide in Darfur. For that reason, we came here to send message to the president of America, Obama. Also, we send message to the United Nations to stop genocide in Darfur.
The protesters also sent an open letter to President Obama, urging him to focus on the situation in Darfur during the last months of his presidency. Amadi says the violence in Darfur did not begin during President Obama's term, but with strong and direct policies, it can end on his watch. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
VOA fellow Nadia Taha contributed to this report from Washington. Still in Darfur, health officials in Birjin refugee camp in eastern Chad say they have no medicine to treat Sudanese refugees who fled the conflict in Darfur. The camp hosts around 45,000 people from Sudan's Darfur region. Hawa Adam is a nutrition officer in the camp's health center. She says the center receives more than 700 patients in a week, but there is no medicine to treat the sick refugees. Speaking in Arabic, she says, now, the situation in Beijing refugee camp is not good. The people come to the hospital, but there is no medicine to give to the sick refugees, she says. Even the doctor is asking people to stop coming to the hospital. Beijing camp leader Mohammed Abakar says the health center needs urgent medical supplies. He says there are lots of cases of malaria and diarrhea among the children in the camp. The most difficult thing we have in the camp is medicine, he says. The problem is when you go to the hospital and they will tell you to come tomorrow for medicine or the day after. Now we have more than a month we don't have medicine in the camp. The United Nations says millions of people have been driven from their homes due to the conflict in Darfur. Now we move to Uganda, where police have arrested Kizza Besigye again today after the opposition leader planned to lead a protest march to the Electoral Commission in order to collect proof of the presidential election results. VOA's Jill Craig speaks with legal experts in Kampala to learn more.
It was the latest in a series of arrests for Kizza Besigye, who lost Thursday's elections to incumbent Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni. Besigye intended to lead a protest march from his home to the Electoral Commission, where he would gather evidence that he said would help him decide whether to contest his loss at the Supreme Court. But Besigye's attorney says police arrested him the moment he went outside his gate. Attorney Peter Magella is a project manager at Chapter 4, a Kampala-based civil rights organization. He says a candidate can file a challenge to election results with the Supreme Court within 10 days of the announcement of the results.
If the ruling government believes it won the vote genuinely, let him challenge, because if there is no evidence, he will still lose in court. So it defeats justice, it defeats reason to try and block him from accessing that evidence to go to court.
Instead, Magella says security forces should have facilitated Besigye's plans.
To me, my advice would have been let police and the security agencies give him a way to look for the evidence he's looking for and make sure he's safe and the other people are safe.
Kampala attorney Robert Kirunda offers a different solution.
It is fair for the police to say that he cannot disturb the peace while doing that. Well, then what they should have done is drive the evidence to him.
Kirunda points out police arrested Besigye before he committed an offense, a so-called preventive arrest.
Now, if you say it's preventive arrest, then allow him access to counsel. But there is a clear mischief here that he is trying to address, and the mischief is that for you to put together a good presidential petition, you need credible evidence. The credible evidence can only be obtained either from the Electoral Commission or from his agents, especially if the issue here is the tallying of results. If he can do neither, he can't meet with agents, he can't meet with counsel, he cannot go to the Electoral Commission for forms, then there's a fundamentally big problem here.
According to Kampala police spokesman Patrick Onyango, Besigye was detained for mobilizing a group of youth to storm the Electoral Commission, who he said planned to cause violence in Kampala. Uganda's Electoral Commission says Museveni won Thursday's elections by a significant margin of about 60.8% to Besigye's 35.4%. The opposition has accused Museveni operatives of vote rigging, while Museveni has said a European Union observer mission was wrong and not serious after it reported the elections had been conducted in an intimidating atmosphere, undermined by a lack of transparency and independence at the Electoral Commission. Museveni has been in power since 1986, when his National Resistance Army took control of Uganda by force, pulling the country out of chaos following a guerrilla war. Jill Craig, VOA News, Kampala.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. South Sudan's government says it welcomes UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon's visit to Juba later this week. The Secretary General is due in the South Sudanese capital on Thursday. His visit comes on the heels of a report to the UN Security Council by the assistant UN Secretary General on Friday, which said South Sudan is on the verge of fragmenting and the conflict threatens the stability of the entire region. It also outlined the recent attack on a UN camp in Malakal. The UNSC has condemned that attack. First Vice President Riek Machar said he won't return to Juba until thousands of his troops are in place. South Sudan Information Minister Michael McQuay says his government will inform Ban Ki-moon about its efforts to implement the peace deal. The UN Children's Agency says hundreds of families have fled the UN Protection of Civilians site in Malakal following last week's deadly attack there. At the UN camp, UNICEF says many children were separated from their families in the chaos. Fighting broke out inside the Malakal UN Protection of Civilian site Wednesday night when gunmen, identified by local politicians as SPLA soldiers, entered the UN mission in South Sudan camp and fired on civilians, looted property, and burned tents. At least 18 civilians were killed, including two humanitarian workers. Vilma Tyler is chief of nutrition for UNICEF in South Sudan, and she says her organization and other humanitarian agencies are still not sure how many people were forced to abandon their temporary shelters, but she says at least 5,000 women and children fled to the UNMISS compound. And finally, Wau state authorities say calm has returned to Wau after 3 days of deadly violence between two ethnic communities there. But traders and citizens are not convinced. They say they're too afraid to go back and want assurances from the government that soldiers accused of killing and looting civilians' property will be arrested and that no more violence will occur. Authorities say the death toll in Wau's intercommunal violence has risen to 20 so far. The dead include a woman and her three children who were burned alive in their house. And that's look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
And that's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Homeless by the Kenyan Boys Choir. We've been listening to the Kenyan Boys Choir with the song Homeless. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We'll be back here tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Somebody say, somebody sing,
hello, hello, hello.
Somebody say, somebody cry,
why, why, why.